Your first choice, Victor. The theme, I suppose, of one's life changed.
Absolutely.
Change is a good thing if you manage it, I think. Don't let it just happen to you by mistake, because people that make things happen are what we're talking about today. And we'll be back with Victor on the flip side of a little commercial spot. All of nature, show the world real small. Tune the frequency, answer the call. Radio Lifestyle 88 FM. Are you looking for a unique venue to host your next brainstorming session, team meeting or workshop, creative class, hobby club, or even a small intimate function? Next Level at the studios at the Lifestyle Center provides an inspiring, creative, and memorable backdrop to the North Coast community to connect at a different level. You have a choice of four boardroom or lounge-type meeting rooms, each individually decorated and appointed and equipped with the latest technology and connectivity. For rates and booking inquiries for an unparalleled meeting experience, visit their website at nextlevelbelito.co.za. Looking for experienced attorneys, notaries, and conveyancers? Well, then talk to the experts at HP Steenkamp Incorporated for professional, efficient service.
At HP Steenkamp Incorporated, we specialize in property transfers, bond registrations, developments, notarial services, and estates. We are panel attorneys for Absa Bank, Standard Bank, and First National Bank. Whether you're buying or selling, you can contact me, Alhard Steenkamp, or Alexandra Pesci for trusted conveyancing assistance.
We also offer notarial services and can assist with anti-nuptial contracts and the notarial authentication of documents. Visit us at HP Steenkamp House, 25 Sandra Road in the Belito Village, or go to hpsteenkamp.co.za to learn more about the conveyancing process and to utilize our cost calculators. We're here to make the process simple and stress-free. Get in touch. We'd love to help.
If you have a vested interest in the North Coast, if you own a home or run a business here, then it's time you join the Hashtag Love North Coast movement. Hashtag Love North Coast collaborates with local businesses, pooling their ideas and resources to market this incredible region. It's a place-making initiative with the ultimate goal of showcasing what we have and further driving investment and tourism. Support the movement by following us on Facebook and Instagram at Love North Coast, or visit www.lovenorthcoast.co.za for information on becoming a partner.
It's 18 minutes past 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning. My very special guest, Victor Snyders from Skin Renewal. We haven't really begun to talk about Skin Renewal yet because we're kind of reminiscing, and I love talking about interesting background stories, background information, background history. And we've so far got you into Howard College or the University of Natal. You're about to become, well, you're about to start studying architecture. Now, I've heard from many that have studied architecture that I know that it's an extraordinarily demanding course. It's not for the faint-hearted. How did you find it?
It was tough. You know, the interesting thing which you don't realize when you're taking on a field like architecture is that the fun part of it is designing a building. But the part of building the building is a far more complex thing. And in retrospect, I'm incredibly happy that I chose that as a career, because as an architect, you are essentially the leader of the project team, and the quantity surveyor and the engineer and all of the people that are involved are reporting to you because you drive that team. So you have to have a fundamental understanding of all of their roles and what it is they do. You have to know enough about mechanical engineering to understand an air conditioning system, and enough about electricity to know what the electrical engineer is telling you, and structure and costs and all of that. So, and what it really taught me more than anything else was managing a project. Now, whether that project was a building project or any other kind of project, but it's bringing together all these things to complete by a certain date, and then managing that process, and really project managing, which was not why I went into architecture, but I found an absolute love for it while I was doing that.
And no doubt it stood you in very good stead as you built your career going forward. And clearly you moved beyond the architecture, but we'll talk about that in a second. Going back a little bit before we get there, we talked briefly about the fact that in 76, television really wasn't a thing. I mean, the test pattern had been a huge talking point. And then those 2 hours in the evening, you know, one Afrikaans, one English, and it was, well, there it was. But before that, there was a very rich radio scenario that every youngster growing up in South Africa had dived into deeply, and you particularly so, because you're still quoting Daryl Yester and Michael Mayer and what is Batterproof Buggy and all
that's
those.
It.
So, but radio was your first love, and I know that it's kind of stayed with you to a large degree, because you were talking about the first broadcast of 702 or very early on in 702, and you were one of their first callers, and you made a request for a tune which we'll play in a second. So you've kind of been part. Were you ever tempted to do any radio work?
When you sit and grow up with the theatre of the mind, and it's the world of imagination, because you listen to plays on the radio and you have to imagine what the people looked like, what they were doing. So your mind was incredibly active in turning an audio story into something that was real. So that world of imagination was fantastic. And we used to copy the voices. I listened to the Pip Friedman show, which is 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And then we imitated those voices. And then Daryl Yester and Michael Mayer came on the A service. Pip Friedman was on Springbok Radio. And then in the evenings, I was always jumping across to LM Radio, which was my first taste of John Burks and Stan Katz and those guys. So it was just this... The one thing I shared always with John Burks, a line that he had, and he said he had the perfect face for radio.
Well, that has certainly become a bit of a radio thing. But you mentioned the fact that the theatre of the mind gave you tremendous joy, because you always found the perfect picture for you. This was ubiquitous. Everyone does. Which is why radio is such a powerful medium. And I think to a degree why it's so heavily regulated, because it communicates on a level that very few other media manage to do, because you have to make the pictures. So if someone is talking, you're trying to pretty much put that into a form that you can understand, what they look like, what they sound like, and who they might be, and the influence of that. And then, of course, if you're doing a sort of commercial description, you're making up the entire cast, the personas dramati, and they're always absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's quite disappointing when you walk into a studio and you see, oh my God, is that the radio presenter? I don't know, I thought it was much more. But yeah, so we grew up in that world. It was a very different world. A pity that it was taken out. Springbok Radio was an institution, but it had to make way for television. But you, 1976, into university, youngster, 17, turning 18, getting into, no doubt, all sorts of trouble, as one does at that age. And you mentioned that this was about the time that you first arrived on a little bit of a look-see in Ballito.
Well, at university in KZN, there was the Rag Weekend, which was in Durban. But the week before the Rag Weekend was called Country Districts Rag, and every res got allocated a region. So one res went down to Port Shepstone, one went to Scottborough, and our res had been allocated Ballito.
I didn't even know Ballito was a thing in the 70s.
Nor did I. So we got in our cars, and we had generators and everything, about 170 of us with various appendages and cooler boxes and whatever, and we drove. And the freeway ended at Umhlanga. And then we were on a single lane road through the sugar cane, and we drove, and we drove, and we drove. And eventually there was a sign to Ballito where you could turn off that road and head down a very narrow road past a single shop and then crest the hill. And there were a couple of houses, and we parked the cars. I still remember, I think it was Thompson's Beach. And we parked at the top of a very long concrete ramp, and then carried everything down and had our beach party on the Friday night. And then on the Saturday, we struggled, believe me, struggled, back up this concrete ramp with all our kit. And then we distributed Rag magazines in Ballito, Salt Rock, Sharkers Rock.
So you were the very first Rage. That was the rage, the beginning of it all.
Absolutely.
And since then, well, it's changed tremendously. But you saw Ballito before it was even a town. I think just a little
absolutely
fishing village stroke possibly retirement spot. Who knows? And funny, all those years later, here we are sitting talking on the radio in Ballito. Who knew?
Amazing.
Gosh. But at some stage during your university career, you also decided to get married, which is a very bold step.
It was right at the end. So I did 4 years at KZN, and it had turned into too much of a party. It was getting out of control. And I realized that if I carried on in that vein, I was A, in danger of not qualifying, and secondly, in danger of either getting arrested or something.
So were you a wild teenager?
You know, when a 17-year-old kid who's lived a fairly protected lifestyle suddenly finds himself in a residence with soldiers who've been spending 2 years in hardened battle and are used to drinking beer by the crate and not by the bottle, it has an influence on one. And I got swept away in it. And I must look, my 4 years at KZN are probably the most fun I've ever had in my life. But I decided that I needed to realign. And I left KZN and I finished my degree up at Wits, and I qualified out of Wits. And while I was doing that, I met someone, and I went to graduation, and the week after graduation I got married, and then I got sent to the army.
Now that is something that not many people can relate to, because generally speaking, your in South Africa, your sort of national service period was another, shall we say, coming of age type deal. But marriage was very seldom part of that. It must be difficult for you to now leave your wife and to go into the South African Defence Force, and before the days of the National Defence Force, to apply. It was still a year, was it?
No, 2 years.
Was it a 2 year call up by then? So there it was. I mean, you were possibly going to be drafted into who knows where.
I went to the showgrounds in Johannesburg, which was the departing station, and I got put on a train, and I found myself in Kroonstadt.
Wow.
And in the engineering corps, because architects generally got sent to the engineering corps because the army thought we had some skills that could be used.
So were you a candidate officer from the beginning because you had a degree? No.
So you did 3 months of basics, which was pretty brutal. And then they selected people to go onto officers' course, which I turned down because it meant that you would have to stay in Kroonstadt and do the officers' course, which was still the end of the year. And I had a wife in Johannesburg. Although I was qualified, a little untrusting of leaving my newlywed wife alone in Johannesburg. So I wanted to get back to civilization, so to speak. So I turned down the officer's course, which, of course, the army doesn't like.
Well, I mean, it was a very brave thing to do in those days, as a private soldier, to take on the might of the military and to try and work it to your will, to bend it and shape it to your will. But clearly you have that ability, because you managed to get yourself into a very cushy situation where you could actually go home every night, which was quite something in those days. Again, I think a mark of the man, because you have forged your own way pretty much from the get-go. Once you were through all of that awful military stuff and setting off on your first crack at the big world, at life, what was your first job?
Well, it actually, my first job was when I was 9 years old.
Oh.
So what happens when you're the son of an entrepreneur? And my father never worked for anyone in his entire life. He left school at 16 and he started figuring out life for himself, and had a very, very big influence on me, because he had this total self-belief that he could succeed no matter what. We had a lot of different ways of looking at life. And I know you're looking at one of the next songs that I've chosen, because the words of that song are so incredibly meaningful to me. But that influence that I had with a father, where you had to make your own way in life. And at the age of 9, I got my first job running the scoreboard at the Wanderers Stadium in Johannesburg at the cricket. And every Saturday and Sunday, I would go and do the scoreboard. until I'd done that for a year, and then they eventually said, maybe we should pay you for doing the scoreboard. So I got given a wage of R1.50 for the weekend, and I used to go to the clubhouse on Monday after school to collect my wage of R1.50. By then, I also had a second job on a Saturday morning, because cricket only started on a Saturday afternoon, pushing trolleys at the local Pick and Pay, or working at a coffee shop washing dishes.
So you literally understood the value of a work. Buck, as they say in America, from the get-go.
Yeah.
There was no easy road for you. It was you worked from childhood, yeah, and you understood the value of that. Although you partied hard at university and you went through the military, but you knew you had to make your way. And let's take a musical segue, talking of your father. Well, another one of your tunes, Victor. It's Cat Stevens, Father and Son. A song that means, I think it's fair to say, it's one that really resonates with you. Why?
You know, it was, my father was a lot older than me. He was 50 years old when I was, or 51 when I was born. So in many ways, he was a grandfather, but he was also an icon. And he really set the principles for what, he built the moral backbone that has ruled my life. And the advice that, as Cat Stevens sings there, you know, find a girl, settle down, maybe you even get married. I took all of that to heart, and I thought that was the recipe to follow.
Well,
that one should do these things.
And you did them, and then you decided, well, maybe there was a slightly bigger story than that. And you embarked on your career at the age of six, earning a crust. But when you left university, what did you were, I presume you graduated as an architect, and you did your, yeah, military training, so you had that profession. Did you go into architecture?
Yes. So I had worked right through university as well. My last 3 years at Wits University, I was actually working full time, just because I needed to earn a crust. So I was working full-time, but I was at university full-time as well. And I used to catch up notes by getting other people's notes, copying them and whatever. And I very seldom was at the university. I only went just enough to get duly performed that I had attended enough lectures.
Wow.
Otherwise, you weren't allowed to do exams. I did my final thesis, which was an airport, and went to the army. While I was in the army, I was also working, because I had worked in architectural firms, and there were a lot of architects that were on the military base in Pretoria and who lived in the military base, but they had no way of earning extra money. And I was getting work from the architectural firm and subbing it out to the architects on the base.
So you had a little, side hustle going,
yeah.
You see, entrepreneurial from the get-go, hey?
There was just no other way. But then I decided I needed to get a real job. And I was far more commercially minded than just designing architects. Plus, I felt that the only way to become a really successful architect, and if you'll excuse the terminology, was to become a prostitute.
Oh.
Because you had to build things the way people wanted them. And it was very seldom that you would get the opportunity to build the way you wanted, because they were the client. And I remember I had a client, I was still in the army, and somebody wanted me to design a house for them. And they asked me to do it in the Bali style. And my response to them all was, if you want to live in a Bali house, move to Bali. Because the Bali house didn't belong in South Africa. It didn't speak to our vernacular. And I would have chased away a lot of clients just simply because I didn't. So I wanted to become more commercial, and I joined OK Bazaars.
As a what?
As an architect.
Okay.
They had an entire architectural division, and they were developing shopping centres and doing store planning.
So did you know Mervyn Cerebro then?
Mervyn Cerebro was my boss. Yeah.
Small world.
And probably one of the most influential people in my life. Was an amazing guy. Our managing director was Gordon Hood, and Mervyn Cerebro was my division head, and he had just taken that position because he was the head of Hyperama. And he moved into the development division, and he was the guy who employed me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And those head office offices, as I recall, in the heart of Johannesburg were very posh
Pritchard Street.
Very, very, very. Not like I think today, they were still kind of the Mad Men style of offices, and it was a different world. But being an architect in the OK Bazaars must have been, what were you designing, the interior of shops?
No, that was the interiors department. My job was essentially designing developments that we were going to do. So what OK's strategy was to develop an entire shopping centre, take a head lease on the shopping centre and let out all the shops. And those businesses or that centre had to be designed, and we had to do feasibilities whether we could generate enough rental from the shops to result in a residual rental for the OK, which would determine whether the OK would be profitable.
So the world of shopping centres is no... You understand the dynamics of the world of shopping centres, which is changing all the time. And the challenges, I think, are huge, especially because of the online sector now becoming so big. People are looking online for almost everything, and I think retail is under pressure.
Undoubtedly, retail is under pressure, but what... You know, in the same way as we played that song, change, it is simply change, and it's how you manage it. What people are looking for is experiences.
Ah.
And if you start dealing with a shopping function as an experiential function, rather than just a transactional function, then you can do it. But you need to provide people with a tactile, tangible experience and not just a purchase.
Interesting. So, with understanding that and the fact that you were in a, well, let's just say designing shopping centers must have been enormously exciting in its own right. But I think for someone as entrepreneurial as you, possibly there was a dead end that you arrived at fairly quickly.
Not really, because I was doing that and I was enjoying it. I'd done it for about a year and a half, 2 years, at which point Mervyn Cerebro called me into his office and he said, listen, I need a person to manage all these shopping centres we own. There were 31 shopping centres.
Wow.
And I said, well, okay, so what about that? He said, no, I think you can do that. And I said, well, I don't. because I've never done a lease agreement. I don't know anything about law, and that I can build shopping centres, but managing shopping centres is way beyond me. So he said, no. He said, I think you got what it takes. And I became National Shopping Centre Manager at OK Bazaars. He sent me off to Wolfie Sessman, who was head of Liberty Life Properties, who by that stage had developed Sandton and Eastgate in Johannesburg. And I had to go and learn the shopping centre industry in a matter of 2 weeks.
Wow.
And fast track it.
So then with that experience and background and backing, why did you eventually segue out of... Well, why didn't you hold that thought while we play another another of your tunes? And this one, tell me about the Deep Purple choice.
So the day that Radio 702 started in Joburg, and as you know, Stan Katz was the brain behind 702, which in those days was a music station.
Yeah.
And LM Radio had disappeared, and Capital Radio was very difficult to get in Johannesburg. And Stan started Radio 702.
Yeah.
And on the day that he started it, people were allowed to call in their requests for music. And I called, I got through, and I was still courting my wife-to-be. And I asked Stan to play this particular song, When a Blind Man Cries by Deep Purple.
And here it is again, all these years later. Deep Purple, When a Blind Man Cries. Another of my guests in the morning on the Dave Charles Show, Victor Snyder's choice of music is what we're playing. That one, kind of sad and melancholic.
It always got to me, that song, and it was not so much, although the words were quite strong, it was the idea of a blind man crying. You know, they always say that the eyes are the window to the soul, and we can see expression in people's eyes. But when you're looking at someone who's blind, that expression doesn't appear in the eyes until they cry. And for me, it was just a very evocative picture, and it was a song that I loved.
Certainly, and all these years later, still as powerful as it was back then. Now, moving backwards in time to your story of your escape from the world of shopping center management into something, I think, a lot more exciting. How did that happen?
Well, it took a couple of steps to get there. Sometimes change is sudden and sometimes it's gradual. But I left OK Bazaars. The world of really big corporate was not one for me. I joined a more entrepreneurial company doing development of shopping centres. I was there for 3 years, then got asked to head up a company for a construction firm to put together developments for them, at which point I was 32 years old and I decided that I was never going to depend on anyone again for a paycheck.
Wow.
And that I was going to do it on my own, which was an interesting choice because I didn't have any money, but I had bought a house. So I sold the house, got my equity out, and rented the house back from the guy that I sold it to, but at least I had some cash. And that bought me 6 months that I didn't have to earn anything, so that was my cover. And decided to open a property consultancy.
So you then clearly had what it takes to literally forge your way, and it's a bold move because one thinks there's security in the big world, in the corporate world. You know, you've got all the perks, et cetera, et cetera. And meanwhile, you identified that really it wasn't like that. It was a little bit of a golden cage. So you broke free and you went into your own property development direction. But I'm trying to get to the skin renewal story, and I'm wondering how we're going to get there because you're on such a divergent path. I mean, the property business and making people beautiful couldn't be more different.
Well, I ran the property consultancy for, I think it was 13, 14 years. Sold it in about year 5 to Murray and Roberts. Rejoined corporate and bought my business back from Murray and Roberts within 12 months because I just couldn't do it that way. I wanted to captain my own ship.
That was a strange move. So you sold it to them and then you bought it back. Did you make money or lose money in the transaction?
At the end of the day, it was neutral to me because when I went to them and I said, listen, this isn't working out. I can't do corporate. I'd like the business back. And they said, well, we paid you money for it. You're going to have to repay us. And I said, funny you should mention that. I kept that money aside just in case.
Oh, so you
and I gave them their money back and they gave me my business back.
Okay, so there it
and
was.
And then we carried on rolling and whatever. During this whole time, I was besotted with work. I think that culture of working and the privilege of being able to work and create and do things, I love that. And to a degree, I was an absentee father and an absentee husband. And by 2001, 2002, my marriage was really had run its course. I'd been married for 21 years. My ex-wife very much wanted to move to Australia. I could qualify to get into Australia because of my qualifications and whatever. So we did the application to go to Australia. I took my ex-wife at that stage, she was still my wife, and my kids to Australia.
So you actually immigrated?
No, yes and no. I took them to Australia and then I left them there. And I came back to South Africa because Africa to me is still the most dynamic country in the world.
But what were you coming back to?
Back to my property consultancy.
Okay, so it was still going.
Yeah. So I did that and very often when a man changes direction in his life, there's a woman behind it. And about 2 years after I split, I was still married because it was me who qualified to get into Australia. And then I met Dr. Maureen. And by that stage, I'd got bored of shopping centers. The ownership of shopping centers had moved away from private ownership to corporate ownership with listed funds. And instead of people who loved the property owning the shopping centres, it was absentee landlords, corporates, accountants, and they had started losing their soul. And I just found myself working on shopping centre after shopping centre, and the only thing that was different was the colour of the tiles or the height of the shop front or the entrance feature. It was becoming cookie cutout. And for someone who's got a creative streak, This just didn't work.
But now you met a new love interest who happened to be a medical professional.
Yep.
with an interest in aesthetics, making people beautiful. And you saw this as an opportunity, not only from a personal perspective, which clearly it was, but also a business perspective.
Well, not actually at that point.
Oh, really?
Because we dated and we were going out, and then we had moved in together, and Maureen had a side hustle. She'd done 10 years in the provincial hospital system. She was working in executive health, and she had a little side hustle going, injecting Botox one afternoon a week from a spare room in her home. And she lived in a sectional title scheme. And after we'd been going out for about a year, and it was starting to look pretty serious, but I was doing my thing during the day, she was doing her thing. And the body corporate sent her a cease and desist letter that she was not allowed to do that in the sectional title scheme, because that was against the rules, and she was bringing in people into the complex that actually shouldn't be there. So she got the cease and desist, so she needed an office. So we arranged an office for her, which was out in Rivonia, with a little 30 square meters. And that opened on the 7th of the 7th, 2005, which was the day of the London tube bombings.
Wow. So 21 years ago, the business, not in its current form, but certainly in its embryonic form.
Not even its name. Maureen opened there that day, came home that evening, and she said, "Vic, I think we've made a mistake."
Wow.
I said, "Why? You know, now you've got your own business." She says, "Yeah, but now it's not a side hustle anymore. Because now I've got to pay rent, I'm going to have to employ staff, and I can't justify that working one afternoon a week. I have to start taking this seriously." And the premises that we had got were not big enough for her to do what she wanted to do. So we went out that weekend and we managed to buy an old house, a really old broken down house in Parkhurst. And we managed to get 100% bond on it because it was a residential property. And I spent the next year demolishing, breaking it down, rebuilding it and turning it into a clinic. Because then Maureen would at least have the facility that she wanted for her business.
Wow.
But I was still doing my thing on the side. There was one problem, however, because now we had a one-room clinic in Rivonia, which had a lot of patients, but not enough space. And we had a beautiful clinic in Parkhurst with a lot of space, but no patients. And the Rivonia patients were not going to drive to the other side of Johannesburg to go to Parkhurst.
Right.
And so Maureen said, "What do we do now?" So the idea we came up with was that she would work half the day at the one place, half the day at the other, and then slowly build up that. Whilst that was happening, there was still no brand. Nothing had been created. We were flying the aeroplane while we were building it, so to speak.
And it was purely Botox at that stage?
No, she'd bought the first piece of laser equipment, which was also 100% financed, and she'd employed one or two staff. And then in November of 2006, we heard of a doctor in Four Ways who had set up a clinic but wanted to sell it.
Okay.
He was getting divorced, and he was offering a buy now, pay later scheme, which entrepreneurs like those kinds of deals. So we bought his clinic without having to pay for it. We paid a deposit, and we had to pay him off over 2 years. And now there were three clinics, and I was still doing my thing, but it was chaos. There were no accounting systems. There was no branding. There were no employment contracts. It was just total and utter chaos. And Maureen running between these three clinics, trying to keep her head above water. And she said to me, "Listen, you've complained enough now about the property industry and the shopping center industry. Maybe it's time to let go of that and get involved in this," which is what we did.
Another bold move. But yeah, I suppose it's fair to say you've been making bold moves throughout your career. And this one was the proof, of course, is in the fact that the business continues to grow to this day, which is unusual because there have been some major cataclysms historically between then and now, which would have knocked most businesses back several pegs.
You know, Dave, in retrospect, one can look back and say that these were bold moves. But at the time that these decisions were made, they were not bold moves. They were just a change. It looks interesting.
A kind of natural progression, in a sense.
It looks interesting.
But you see, there is the benefit of youth to a degree. I mean, you were young when you started. You were 32 when you left that sort of initial phase, and that's very young.
And 46 when we started Skin Renewal.
And so there it is. You had life experience, but you had energy. You still got a lot of energy, but clearly we are of an age, and I know that we tend to see things somewhat differently from this vast passage of time that has lapsed now, but you still have a tremendous amount of drive and verve and a great business brain. So getting into the Skin Renewal product business, whose idea was the name and the ethos behind that?
I think the name came from Maureen. Definitely the name came from Maureen, because we were playing with a couple of ideas when we wanted to brand the business. Because the one thing I said to Maure at the time, I call her Maure, not Maureen, was we cannot call the business Dr. Maureen, because if this business grows and it's got your name on it, everyone will only want to see you. And the business is then limited by your name. So we need to create a brand and have that, because one day it can become a brand which is not dependent on you. And it was really an insurance against not being able to grow. Although our intention was not to grow the business. Because by the time we had those three clinics...
It was enough.
That was enough. That was enough. We had to stabilize that first. But both Maureen and I have a seriously entrepreneurial side, and every time we saw an opportunity or a challenge, we decided, well, let's do one more, and we'll open this one, and then we'll call it quits. And then a year later, there was another opportunity.
And technology was growing pretty rapidly at the same time.
Yeah, we had certain advantages. By that stage, both Maureen and I were empty nesters. Our kids had finished university and schooling. We had owned our homes, and we were able to dedicate ourselves 14, 16 hours a day to the business without having obligations to family and schooling. And we didn't have a lifestyle because we were just working all the time, and we loved doing what we did. I think the ethos of the business was something that came more from my end. We sat down at a fairly early stage and we did what I called at that stage the why exercise. Simon Sinek wrote a very, very famous book about 5 years later called Why. And the entire thing was, why are you doing this business? You need to get your why sorted out. And if the why is to make money, there are many ways to make money. That is not a reason to be in that business. It's a reason to be in business. But why that business? And what we came down to was we wanted to transform lives, to change lives. Now, whether those were the lives of the patients or the lives of our employees or our suppliers, but anyone that we came into contact with, we wanted to change their lives for the better or create the opportunity for them to change their lives for the better. Then the function of making money is so that you can do your why, which gives you a far deeper meaning, because now you are not counting the pennies, but you are creating enough pennies to be able to do what you love and what gives meaning to how you exist.
And clearly it has been, well, I think the fact that you are now 20 branches strong nationwide, I think plans to move beyond that are probably in the offing, knowing you. Unfortunately, time catches us, and I think we've only just begun our conversation. I'm going to have to bring you back in for part two, Victor. But what a story. Skin Renewal, and of course Skin Renewal in Bolito is very much part of the why and the wherefore for the beautiful people to be here. And it's fair to say, I think, that it's not just the skin deep beauty that one is looking at. It is the confidence that comes with looking your best. You know, the good Lord gave us what we start with, and you can make the most of it with skin renewal. So Vic, thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Dave.
And I look forward to continuing the conversation real soon. We'll play out, shall we, with you choose. It's either a Green Day or Dire Straits. We've got a
I think the Dire Straits one will do it.
Oh, it's a beaut. Brothers in Arms, my very special guest, Victor Snyders from Skin Renewal. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dave Charles Show.
My pleasure, Dave.